Take a minute to make an end-of-the-year donation to Life of the Law. It's your donation that makes it possible for our team of journalists and scholars to produce and publish the episode you're about to hear. Whether it's $10, $20, $50, or $100, go to lifeofthelaw.org and support award-winning investigative journalism today and for years to come. Thank you.
Mr. Chief Justice,
and may it please the court.
Our opinion next turns to the problem of what the judicial role should be.
I look for reasons to, like, you know, let's get together, let's all pull our food, and let's cook together, and let's just have this big celebration, and everybody leave full and happy.
This is Life of the Law. I'm Nancy Mullane. Traditions. We all have them. Some good, some not so good. Think for a minute. When you were a kid, what were your holiday traditions? Do you still follow them today? Do you put up lights, maybe make a special cookie, or visit relatives? What if the law made it impossible for you to follow your traditions? For millions of Americans, the men and women locked up in our jails and prisons, holidays can be especially hard. So each year, people living in the Bay Area go inside San Quentin State Prison to sing holiday songs inside the cell blocks. It's a tradition. But what's it like to live inside the prison over the holidays? From inside San Quentin State Prison, Shadeed Wallace Stepter, Rasan Thomas, and Emil DeWeaver got together and produced this story, Traditions.
Same thing we do in Christmas is the same thing we do on birthdays or other holidays, and that's we smoke weed. We smoke a lot of weed. I remember the last Christmas I was out, we went and we had about a quarter ounce of weed with a lot of blunt paper. And what we did was, like, we'd get in someone's car. The last car that we were in was my car. It was a 68 Camaro. And we turned the music up really loud. We're playing Three Times Crazy. It's Oh So Sick and It's Oh So Sick and It's Oh So Simple was the track.
By the way, that's a fantastic song.
Thank you. And, like, we'll go park somewhere, like in the Ben's Burgers parking lot or Quarter Pounder, roll up all the windows, and we'll light two blunts and keep them in rotation.
So for the people that don't know, can you explain what a blunt is?
So a blunt is when you take a cigar, cut it open, dump out the tobacco, and then crush up marijuana in it and roll it up so that it's, like, super big. So you could put, like, a whole dub sack in one blunt. A dub sack is $20 worth of weed. And so we would roll up blunts. So we'd roll them all up. So it'd be, like, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 blunts. And then we'd have a bunch of Havatampas, which are cigars with wooden tips. And we would smoke them two at a time and pass them around the car. And we would be, like, 5 to 6 deep in a car that really shouldn't hold any more than 4. But, you know, we all got to get in there. And so we would sit and we would smoke and we would bump music very loud. And we would just, like, what we call hot box.
Please, for the people that don't know, describe hotboxing, right? And, like, I'm feeling really nostalgic right now, right? Because, like, you just said everything that you said, like, I completely understand and identify with, right? So for the people that don't know what hotboxing is, please explain it.
So hot box is basically, so you keep all the windows rolled up so it becomes like a sauna, but instead of steam smoke, it's marijuana smoke. So there's like this intensified contact feeling. And it just, it makes you higher. And so we hot box. And when we're done hot boxing, then we would like roll the windows down, smoke a Tampa to like, again, be higher. And we would drive around. So depending on what kind of, what time of day it was or night, we would go to where there were women. And we would talk to them, we'd get phone numbers, we'd like, you know, act up. Sometimes we would start sideshows. We would eat lots of food. And that's how we celebrated birthdays.
So again, for the people, for the laymans out there that don't know what a sideshow is, right?
Uh-huh.
Please explain like what a sideshow is. And I think it's safe to say that sideshows originated in Oakland.
I think it's pretty safe to say that.
I think, you know, people have sideshowed like in like every hood probably across the United States, but it's a specific way that it's done that's like been, I feel like, made famous by, you know, the exploits of the men in Oakland. So what's a sideshow?
So a sideshow, so think of a rodeo, right? Like you go to a rodeo, cowboys come out on horses and they on bulls and they just give a show. People are watching and they're like, oh my God, it's fantastic, dangerous, and also like awesome. So it's a sideshow is an urban rodeo with cars instead of horses. And so what you will see is people blocking off intersections or blocking off stretches of road and doing tricks in their cars, whether that's donuts, figure eights, and just basically smoking up the place. And that's a sideshow. And people watch, they cheer. It's exciting. It's irresponsible, but like when you're 16, like, you know, you can expect irresponsible behavior. And so that's what a sideshow is. And we did it, you know, to impress girls and to what's called side on each other, which is basically like, my stuff is fly. Look at me do this. So that's a sideshow.
Okay. Thank you for that. I know it's funny, right? Like, as you talk, there's certain stuff that I haven't heard be said in like years, unless you're from like the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Like, smoke them up. Like, people don't say that. If you're not from the Bay Area, people do not talk about like a way that you burn rubber, the burn when you hold the brake and hit the gas and burn the rubber off your tires on your wheel car, on the rear end of your car. People don't call that soap smoke them up.
Yeah.
Outside of the Bay Area.
Yeah, it's true.
1, 2, 3. Oh, come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come ye to Bethlehem. Come and behold him, born the King of angels. Oh, come, let us adore him.
Yeah, my birthdays, man, were pretty simple. A good birthday for me when I was a kid would be my mom would bake a cake. She was excellent at baking these homemade cakes, and I would get a present. It was pretty simple. As I got older, as an adult, a good birthday for me was just spending some time with my girl. Just whatever special event she had it planned up, whether it be a dinner or a romantic evening, that was a good birthday for me. My favorite holidays growing up as a kid was Christmas. Christmas was big because we grew up in Atlantic Towers, which is in Brownsville, which is a neighborhood full of a bunch of different housing projects. But we were upper class poor. And so I didn't even know we were poor because compared to my neighbors, it felt like we were rich. And Christmas, like at 9, 10, 11, was this big event where you'll wake up early in the morning, like as early as possible, and you'll look under that tree and it would be everything you can imagine under there that you wanted as a kid, like Legos and action figures and video games, or whatever the latest video game that year was, from the Atari 2600 to when it elevated to ColecoVision to the 5200. or whatever games I wanted that I didn't already have. And clothes. My mother loved Izod. I wasn't into fashion as a 9 or 10 year old, but my mother was, and she would give me a bunch of stuff. Only problem was she loved red, and she just didn't get it that her kid does not like red. I don't want to wear no red corduroy pants, Ma. But other than that,
red corduroy pants. Oh my God,
man. But other than that, Christmas was just big, man. It was just a whole bunch of gifts unwrapped. So at least 10 presents each. It was amazing. And we tried to make it good for my moms too. Me and my little brother would always like save up all year to buy my moms like a piece of jewelry or something. So it was always big, man. And of course, she would have the cookies. The fantastic breakfast would go down with the French toast with real cinnamon and scrambled eggs and all kinds of sausages. And oh, man, Christmas was excellent.
A newborn king to see, ba ra ba pam pam. The finest gifts we bring, ba ra ba pam pam. To lay before the king, ba ra ba pam pam, ra ba pam pam, ra ba pam pam.
So Thanksgiving was always a big tradition. We would always go to one of the many aunts and extended aunts' homes in my family. And it was always like big. It'll always be like turkey cooked, ham cooked, maybe some type of roast, a variety of at least 7 or 8 flavors of pies and cakes. Sweet potato pie is huge. And I think not just my household, but the, you know, African-American households. Sweet potato pie on Thanksgiving and Christmas is like a big deal. And, you know, greens and candied yams and macaroni and cheese and, you know, the whole nine. Stuffing, you know, my dad always made, like, he was famous for the stuffing because he would put walnuts and apples in it. And somehow it worked fantastically. But on Thanksgiving, man, me and my cousins, we always played football, and for some reason on Thanksgiving, I always got hurt. Like, every time. Like, you can expect that I'm going to get hurt, right? So I think the Thanksgiving that's most memorable to me is when I think I was about 11 years old. And so we go to my Aunt Doris's house, and so this Thanksgiving... So we got for some reason, man, we got dressed up, and like I had on slacks, and I had on like these loafers with the dress socks on under it. You know it's big, like, you know, you dressed up when you got on black socks, right? Like, I had on the black socks, and like me and my brothers, we had on like these button up like white shirts that button up to the throat, but like a sweater vest on over it, right? You know what I mean? It wasn't even a sweater vest. It was like a V-neck button-up sweater that we put on, right? And so for some reason that day, the only people that's playing football is my older brother, myself, and my cousin Pooh, right? Now, my cousin Pooh, he's 2 years younger than me, but he's at least 3 inches and like 40 pounds heavier than me. But he's 2 years younger than me, right? But like, I can beat him up. But, like, physically, he dominates me, right? Like, he's a better basketball player than me. He's a better football player than me. But, like, I refuse to admit this, though, right?
Yeah.
So, this day, like, we're playing football, but we're – it's just, like, it's not a game, but it's, like, you know, my brother's playing quarterback, and my cousin Poole would, like, guard me and I'd be receiver, or I would guard him while he's a receiver. But, like, every time he's a receiver this day, like, 7, 8 times in a row, like, he's dogging me. He's beating me off the line. He's getting behind me, and he's burning me for, like, a touchdown, like a 30-yard throw every time. And I'm furious, right? Like, I'm so upset that this dude is whooping me today. Right? Like, I can't figure it out. It was making it worse, right, is my older brother is having the time of his life, like, throwing these Joe Montana passes to my cousin Pooh, right? And so my older brother is, like, looking at me, right, and he's – and, like, in my mind, I'm feeling like he's throwing way better balls to this dude, right? Because for one, like when I'm the receiver, I can't get off the line. He's jamming me, and like my brother is overthrowing me every time, right? The ball is just like sailing over everything, right? And like the look on my cousin's pool face is killing me. So like on
Wait, what was the look? Can you describe the look?
He kind of has like, he's smiling a little bit, but it's more a look like you can't stop me, and I can, and I own you, right? This is what the look is telling me, right, in this dude's face, right? And so there's, I line up to be a receiver, and I'm telling myself, right, like by this time I'm filthy. My slacks is dirty. Like this white shirt is done. Like a button is missing off of my button-up sweater, right? Like I look, I can tell, I feel horrible. Like I'm sweating, but like my collar is still buttoned up to the throat, right? Like I feel horrible, right?
Yeah.
But on this specific, like this pass, like I'm like, okay, I'm about to turn it around after this pass. I'm about to burn him. When I get on defense, I'm gonna shut him down. But it's about to start with like this touchdown bomb my brother's about to throw to me, right? So like I line up, and I don't even tell my brother what I'm about to do, right? Like I'm expecting him to read my mind. Like I'm going deep. Like I'm expecting him to read my mind. Like listen, I'm going deep. I'm about to run straight, and I'm about to run as fast as I can. Just get the ball to me, right?
Yeah.
So I line up, and I get off the line clean. Boom, he doesn't touch me. And my brother throws the ball, right? So the only thing that I'm doing is I'm looking up, and I'm looking at the ball. So the only thing in my mind, like I'm getting under this ball, and I'm about to catch it. So I take off running as fast and as hard as I can. Halfway where the ball's in the air, I'm under the ball, it's going great. Then next thing you know, I feel a boom, right? Like my thighs go out from under me. I feel like this burning sensation in both of my thighs. I ran into a parked car.
Oh, shit!
I ran into a parked car, right? And then not even like, I just ran into a parked car. I ran into a parked car when I didn't think it was a car in front of me. I'm talking about, and when I ran into it at full speed, and it laid me out. I was running so hard, bro, like I was halfway under the car when I hit the car. Like I hit the car and like slid like halfway under the front of this car, right? And so when I look back up, right, because first of all, I'm crying, I'm hurt, I feel like somebody just shot me on my legs. When I look back up, my brother and my cousin Pooh are on the ground laughing hysterically. I'm talking about hysterically, right? But I'm so angry at my brother because, like, I'm thinking, like, why did you throw that ball so hard in that direction, right? Like, where he threw the ball at,
he led
right?
You to the car. Yes.
Bro, where he threw the ball at, first of all, there was no way that I was going to catch that ball inbounds.
Yeah.
Second of all, like, why didn't you say stop or anything? He just let me, like, run into that car, right? And then I had like a Charlie horse in both of my thighs for the rest of the day.
So, how were you walking? How were you walking?
Like, bro, I was basically like dragging my body with my calves. Because I could not like move my thigh muscles at all, bro.
For those who don't know, in the ghetto, like we laugh at tragedy in the pain of the people we love.
Yes.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yonder.
When I first got to prison, I shut down basically. So I was just like super depressed, and so I didn't celebrate holidays. I tried not to acknowledge them. When I first came to prison, the first thing I did was I stopped keeping track of time. I had 67 years of life. I was 18 years old, and thinking about time was just too much for me. So I stopped keeping track of it. Birthdays would come around, I'd wake up, I didn't even know it was my birthday. Like it'd be in the middle of the day somewhere, and I might see the date like on a board somewhere, and be like, oh shit, it's my birthday today. When I first came to prison, it was just a lot of denial of holidays and special occasions and like any day. Like I I just tried to like block out time. And even to this day, because that was like my survival mechanism for so long, I have trouble like keeping track of time. I have to write down everything. Like, yeah, like you asked me what was the date last Wednesday, I couldn't tell you. Yeah, I don't, like, time is like very difficult for me to track.
Yeah, when I first came to prison, the first thing that blew my mind is meet my cellie. This guy was an older guy that was about maybe 5'5", but he scared the hell out of me because he told me he had been down almost 30 years on a 15-to-life sentence. And when he told me that, I realized, wait a minute, when they gave me 55 to life, they mean it? I had convinced myself prior to meeting him that that was just something that was going to fix itself somehow, that it was going to work out on a pill. I wasn't really going to be there forever. And then meeting him let me know that, man, they ain't, when they say life, they mean it. They ain't never got to let you go. And so meeting that cellie hit me with the fact that life really means life. And so my prison existence became about how am I going to change that, or can I change that? And accepting the fact that no matter what, it wasn't going to change overnight. It wasn't something that was going to happen anytime soon. This is my life. This is my life.
Yeah, I think my first experience in prison. So, yeah, when I got to the first mainline that they sent me to after being convicted and going through reception was Calipatria State Prison. And I got there on June 27th at about 2 o'clock, no, about 2:30 in the afternoon. And so this was the middle of summer. I think it was about 114 degrees at the time. And so I remember, you know, so the buses are like, the buses that you transported on are like greatly air conditioned, right? And so when I get off the bus, what really shocked me was how hot it was. Like, I get out the bus and like I get, step onto the ground of R&R, I'm like, oh my God, what is this? Like, it was like, it was so hot, it felt like the heat just like, it tightly embraced me. Yeah. Like everything, I'm talking about to my hand, it felt like my fingers were sweating, that's how hot it was, right? And so we're outside for like 5 seconds, and then we walk into R&R, and then the climate is like perfectly controlled, it's air conditioned, it's great again, right? So I'm like, okay, cool. So we sat in there till about 2:30. We put all of our property in like this orange cart. They shackle all of us up. It's like 9 of us on the like one chain, right? We got ankle chains on, and we're all joined at the waist by like one long like shackle. You know what I mean? Like a chain gang. It reminded me of a chain gang, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking, something told me like, don't be the first dude in line for some reason. Because the first guy was responsible for pushing everybody's property in his orange cart.
Oh, damn.
Right? So we get onto the yard, and like the yard is separated between like there's a track in like the front of the yard, then like the prison yard is separated by this track. So we're on the track and we walk past the weight pile, right? And for some reason, like at the time I thought it was just like heat, like it's just absurdly hot here, right? Like this is ridiculous. But what it was it was tension that I was sensing, right? So when we walk past like the weight pile is separated from the yard because the weight pile is enclosed in like this chain link fence. So the weight pile is like its own area. So on the weight pile, like out of nowhere, I see this white dude with his shirt off and two other white guys, and they had shirts on, and they start fighting, right? And so when they fight, like I'm looking, but it looked weird, right? It wasn't because I've seen a number of fights, right? But this fight looked different because the guy was fighting so frantically. You know what I mean? He was fighting really frantically, and it just looked like, you know, while he was fighting, I just seen like he was in a panic, right? And so while they're sitting there fighting, they're going back and forth, boom, 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 they're fighting. Then next thing you know, the tower shoots a tear gas canister. Right in like the area, like the immediate direction of the area. Like he didn't come close to hitting the guys that were fighting. He just shot into the weight pile. So when he shoots, the tear gas canister hits a shirt that's on a pull-up bar and sets it on fire.
Oh, damn.
Right, the shirt sets on fire, right? And so like what got everybody's attention, like even the dudes that was fighting, right? It's three guys fighting. that the shirt sets on fire, right? And like they see that and it just looks so crazy, right? Like, so everybody gets down. So we get down, and like when I get down right in front of the guy that was fighting with his shirt off, right? And so as I'm sitting down, first of all, I'm realizing it's hot. Then it slowly starts to dawn on me why this guy was fighting so frantically, right? Because when the COs get on him, they get on his back, they cuff him up, and they pull him on his side, right? This is like immediately in front of me. The only thing that separates me and this guy is a chain link fence. And every time he inhales and his stomach fills up, I see like four puncture wounds, or what I learned was puncture. I see four little holes, and every time he inhales, like a trail of blood comes down each wound or each hole. Then I feel like, oh, and then I realize, I mean, this dude got stabbed. This dude had been, these dudes was stabbing him. You know what I mean? And then it hit me like, oh, this dude was fighting so hard because he was fighting for his life.
Yeah.
He was literally fighting for his life. You know what I mean? And so like, as I realized that, like they pull the guy up, they sit him up like, oh, wait a minute, this guy's been stabbed. And like they got the other guys like about 5 feet away from him on their stomachs, handcuffed to the back. And like, you know, they're kind of laughing like, yeah, man, and, you know, that's what you get, man. Like, that's what you get. So as they pull this guy up, right, he got all of this gravel like still on his stomach, right, and this dirt like all around like his puncture wounds, right? Then it just, for some reason, the weirdest thought hit me, right? Like, as he gets up, I'm like looking at his chest. And this dude just got stabbed. He was fighting for his life. But the first thing that comes to my mind, right, is like, this ground must be unbearable. And this dude was like laying on this ground with no shirt on. He probably has like second degree burns. Definitely. That, for some reason, that was the first thing that came to my mind, right? And that was my first day on the mainline prison.
Traditions for me in prison is just food, man. I think that's the only comfort thing we have left. So typically on any holiday, it's an excuse to make burritos or nachos. Those are my two favorite dishes. Or if I'm really nostalgic, I'll make my spaghetti, which I use with what we call summer sausages. These sausages that you buy that just last forever. They just like never die. And you chop those up and you... they don't sell us tomato sauce, so I have to substitute with chili with no bean sauce. And that would be my tomato sauce, and pour that over pasta, and that's my thing, man. It's simply that, just having some food and sharing, making extra and share with my neighbors. And that's a holiday to me. That and a chance to go play some basketball.
Which you horrible at, but okay.
So for a long time, I had like, stop celebrating holidays, stop celebrating birthdays. But for the past like 4 or 5 years, I've been making a conscious effort to start celebrating them again. And like Rasan says, it's generally about some form of like congregation and food. Like for instance, this Thanksgiving, me and like all my gamer buddies, we got together and we decided that we were gonna spend Thanksgiving together playing Dungeons and Dragons. Like it was like a special game. We were gonna make these characters, right, and just fight each other. It was like if you ever seen like wrestling, WrestleMania, like all these people come into the ring and they fight each other. And like there's all these
like the Royal Rumble.
It's like a Royal Rumble. So we made these characters to have a Royal Rumble of like Dungeons and Dragons nerds. Like we don't mind calling ourselves nerds. We're good with it. And one of my friends, like he made homemade fudge brownies. Now, so like I've had all kinds of stuff in prison. Prison is a place of like ingenuity and creativity. So like, you know, dudes make apple pies, dudes make candy, and apple pies are good, but it tastes like a prison apple pie. But these brownies tasted like brownies with fudge in them, and they were no less than 2 inches thick. They might have, some of them were like 3. I was biting them and eating them, and they were so good that I couldn't stop giggling. Like, it was just that good. Like, I was just kept giggling, and like everyone's laughing at me, like those brownies must be hella good. And I'm like, yeah, these brownies are that damn good, because I was like moving around giggling and like doing little dances. At one point I had to hug the cook, right? And there's not like a lot of hugging in prison, especially like black dudes hugging white dudes. But I was like, it's time to take the risk of us getting stabbed to death for these brownies. no one's getting stabbed in San Quentin for that. But that's gonna become like a tradition for me, like just like coming together with friends and like just doing something together. Like, I'm not big on like Thanksgiving itself. Like, there's a whole lot of stuff around that, but I do believe in like, you know, community and family, and that's my time for that. Every year I will find a time to like integrate in my community and be doing something.
Yeah, I think I'm similar to both of you guys, like, especially what Rasan said about, you know, us, a lot of traditions, like, revolving around food. Like, in prison, like, I feel like that's all we have to, like, celebrate around is, like, food. And so, like, now, you know, especially since being at San Quentin, I look for reasons to, like, you know, let's get together, let's all pull our food, and let's cook together, and let's just have this big celebration, and everybody leave full and happy. So I like to leave like these celebrations to where I'm so full when I get back to the cell, like only thing I'm forced to do is sleep. You know what I mean? Like that's why, like, so like say for instance, like on a birthday or Thanksgiving, especially with Christmas coming up, you know what I mean? Like everybody's going to get together. We're going to like figure out like how much is it going to, first we're going to figure out like how many people is going to be, who's all going to put in. So if it's going to be 15 people,
For people listening, what does it mean to put in prison?
And so putting in like means like if it's 15 people, how much food do we need to feed all 15 people, right? So we figure out like, oh, it's probably gonna cost about $80 for us to get. So it's probably gonna cost like $80 for us to get like enough food, enough chips, enough meats, enough cheeses to like make like four or five burritos and like a side of chips and like one or two sodas for like 15 dudes, right? Like this is what it's gonna cost. And so around, you know, holidays, like that's what we do. We figure out like how much it's gonna cost. We get everything together and we make burritos and we eat and we get full.
Joy to the earth, the Savior reigns. Let men their songs employ. While fields and floods, rocks, hills, and plains, we keep the sounding joy. We keep the sounding joy. Repeat the sounding joy.
Let me ask you something, right? One thing that seemed to, for me to change from being incarcerated, from being free. How many people remember you on the holidays nowadays?
I don't know. Usually for me, it's me figuring out, reaching out to people, because it's harder for people to reach out to me. So it usually revolves around like how many people I consistently reach out to. And it's usually like my mom, my aunt, and like my brothers. Yeah. What about you?
For me, I used to send out like maybe 20, 30 cards on Christmas. I would get like two back. After like 10 years of doing that, I said, forget them mother suckers. I was just stopped doing it. But the only good thing about the holidays, the way I can kind of insert myself into my family's gatherings on the street, is that they always pile up at my step pop's house. Everybody's gonna be there. My brothers, my sons, cousins we haven't spoke to in 30 years. Mm-hmm. Everybody's gonna be there. And I would call there, and 15 minutes, you got 15 minutes. I would talk to each person for maybe like a minute, 30 seconds, just pass the phone. Who else is there? Who else is there? Pass the phone to him, pass the phone to him. Who else is there? Who else is there? And so that's one of the things I like to do. But other than that, that car right there, I feel pretty forgotten about, man. The car, the only one that's gonna send a card is my aunt. You know what I mean?
We have heard on high, sweetly singing o'er the plains and the mountains in reply. Echo back their joyous strains.
Traditions was produced by Shadid Wallace Stepter, Rasan Thomas, and Emil DeWeaver, reporters inside San Quentin State Prison, and the elected officers of the San Quentin chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. I recorded the holiday carols inside the prison cell blocks. Life of the Law's senior producer is Tony Gannon. We want to thank Lieutenant Sam Robinson and Ron Davis, warden of San Quentin State Prison, for making this episode possible. Our post-production editors are Kirsten Jesuits-Heidel and Rachel Kane. Rob Spade of KQED in San Francisco is our engineer. If you're curious about the law and like binge listening, tune into Life of the Law on iTunes. We have more than 120 amazing episodes about people and the law. Take a few minutes to post your review, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Each time we publish a new episode, we send everyone who's subscribed to our newsletter a behind-the-scenes look at Life of the Law, including notes from our reporters and our listeners. We're a nonprofit project of the Tide Center, and we're part of the Panoply Network of Podcasts. You can also find Life of the Law on PRX, Public Radio Exchange. We're funded by the Law and Society Association, the National Science Foundation, and by you. Visit our website, lifeofthelaw.org, and make a very much appreciated donation to help pay for the direct costs of producing our episodes. Next on Life of the Law, a very special Christmas Day reprise episode.
Although I was separated from my own children during my incarceration, I have found myself being a surrogate father to so many young prisoners who have also become my surrogate sons.
That's coming up, a special Christmas Day reprise episode here at Life of the Law. I'm Nancy Mullane. Thanks for listening.